Hello and welcome to the Ad Love podcast. How are you, my Ad Love family? Do I have some exciting things for you? Okay, first of all, if you are following the Instagram, you would now know that I have a producer who is a young, spectacular, amazing human being named Fadilla, and she will be producing the podcast moving forward, which means everything going forward is just going to be better. I've worked tirelessly behind the scenes on my own to try and create the best possible product, the best possible podcast for you all to listen to, whether you're cleaning the house or on the drive to or from work or going to, you know, whatever it is that people do when they listen to podcasts. And now Fadilla's come on board and already her tireless work effort has been amazing and a massive contribution to the Ad Love journey. Second of all, I've been living in Melbourne for almost 10 months now, and this is going to be the first Melbourne-based person that I've interviewed, funnily enough. The last few episodes with Serene and Wijdan and Jartung are actually all not Melbourne-based. So even though I had moved here, I was still interviewing people that I had a tether to, a connection to back in Sydney. And I really am looking forward to bringing you some amazing Melbourne talent. Some of these people are spectacular and you are going to absolutely love them. And this is the first one. My guest today is Erhan. I met Erhan through some of the creative photography circles here in Melbourne. But needless to say, he's not just a photographer. He's a deep thinker. He's an awesome human. We spend a lot of time talking about third culture, which has been a running theme actually. We talk about the arts, we talk about photography and the social contract behind it. We talk about trusting the process of being artistic, we talk about collaboration, we talk about burnout and what that looks like. I'm just going to stop talking because this episode is awesome and I've really been looking forward to it. Please help me in making my guest feel welcome, Erhan.
Just add love, don't be delirious. Just add love, stop whining so serious. Just add love, a little more lenience. Just add love, the key ingredient.
I laugh loud.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the
Testing,
did you put the, have you put things onto it?
Limit testing. Yeah, look, as long as I don't go do that again.
That's fine, that's it's not going into red. We're good, yeah? Good. Yeah, that shit's gonna happen. I'm telling you and me talking, it's gonna happen. Trust.
I love it.
All right.
Oh bro, so good to have you. Finally, you know, like you're actually the first Melbourne-based podcast person, even though I've moved here for a while.
What do you mean?
And I've recorded a few episodes, like I've booted the podcast back up, we're going at it again. All the people that I've interviewed are all from Sydney.
No,
even though I've done it here.
What?
Yeah, so you're actually the first Melbourne-based podcast, so we're here. It's a special episode.
Respectfully, thank you, it's an honour, but also, you know, oh, I got it first. No one can talk shit now. I'm just gonna. This guy right here.
Yeah. No, look, man. We've had so many good conversations like since we've met, and it's always like beautiful and deep, and I guess that's the essence of the podcast. I'm like, we have to, you know, every time we talk, it's a podcast episode.
It's not. It's just us. But you're right. I agree. But maybe we should, do you want to give people a little bit of context about
Yeah, tell us, maybe? Tell us about, I guess, your background.
Okay, about like, what I do.
Yeah, what you do. And then we'll go into the depth of that later. Mm. But just on surface level, you know, what is it that you do in your day to day?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so my name's Erhan. I was born in Melbourne, Turkish background. Both my parents are Turkish from Izmir, in Where did I grow up? I grew up in Meadow Heights, Broadmeadows area. So
for all the Sydney siders, that listen, that's the Bankstown of Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah. Let's be upfront about that. But like, you know, super loving family. I finished high school, went into university straight away at the age of 17, doing a double degree in psychology and social work. So that took like 5 years. That was intense and a lot to take in as a 17-year-old. But I think I was up to it. Finished that, worked as a counsellor for about a year, give or take. That sort of took its toll on me. So then I left that industry and started working at a cafe. Shout out to Ample Cafe in North Melbourne. Go there. Best falafel in Melbourne, I'm telling you. So then I started working there for like 3 years. But I think I always knew that I wanted to be a photographer. I started taking pictures when I was 16. I remember like my old man, when I left high school, I was like, I mean, obviously, you know, you're growing up in an ethnic family. Being a photographer isn't something that you think about as a career. It's just something that you do as a hobby. So I was very much like grew up with that mentality. You know what I mean? Which is nuts. But I mean, when you're a kid growing up in the area, like you don't think about that. So when I burnt out, like I had a couple of family members pass away and I was just like hit a wall. I was like, nah, fuck this. I just need space to just float a little bit. So then I hit my friend Matt up. I was like, hey, I just need a job. Like, let me come work at the cafe. I'll do whatever you want. I just need somewhere to go and not think about what I'm
doing.
So I did that. Did that for 3 years. But in the back of my mind, it was always like photography, photography, photography. I wouldn't say that out loud to people because they look at you weird. When I was 18, I got my first, like I said to my dad, and he always loved photography. Like he was always the one with the camera in the family, like throughout him growing up when they migrated here too. Yeah, so I was like, hey, like I've got 3 months of doing nothing. Like let's get me a nice camera and I can just do that for like a while. You know, so that's when it kind of started for me. Started just taking photos, hanging out with people when I was, you know, you go to parks, take photos of friends, all this shit while I was studying social work. And when I burnt out, it was like, I hit this real low point. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing with your life? Like, really? You know, when people pass away, you start questioning everything.
Existential crisis.
Yes and no, in a way. I mean, it was like the hard thing was it was like the fifth person that had passed away in my life. So grief wasn't something that was new to me. But it's like, it took the fifth time to be like, like what? What's the point? What are you doing? Like, I really broke myself down. And I was like,
And you're still very young as well. Like,
yeah, I'm 28 now.
Yeah. No, I mean, in this moment that you're saying.
Yeah, I was 20. That was 4 or 5 years ago. I was 20, 24. Yeah. Super young. You know, some people that happens early, I think it's life experience, right? Depending on what you go through. But yeah. And then I was like, okay, like, what do you want to do? Like, if you died tomorrow, like, what would you have been like? Fuck, I wish I did that. And it was always photography. You know what I mean? So I started working at the cafe to supplement my own income. Started my photography business for a year. Just all I did was I need to take photos of people. So I reached out to anyone and everyone that I could and said, hey, can I take a portrait? Hey, can I take a portrait? Like really annoying people. If people I didn't know, which is great. What I didn't realize I was doing is really honing my craft. I was just like, this is really selfish. I want to take photos of people. I'm going to go do it. But really what I was doing was getting all the technical skills down pat.
Right.
And then portraiture became
learning on the job.
Yeah, but also like I wasn't worried about getting paid. You know, I was at the cafe that was giving me enough money to be able to live my day-to-day life. I was trying to figure out how to break into the industry. You know? And how do you break into the industry without a portfolio? You can't. You need to build one.
You create the portfolio by doing free shit.
Doing free shit. But like free shit in the way that it also taught me how to, you know, being at the cafe and doing that also taught me how to network and connect with people. I'm an introverted person by nature. You know, people don't see that now because I've taken the time to learn the skills associated with communicating and being able to help people relate with my experience. I don't want to say manipulate because that's not what I'm about.
Yeah.
But really, you can't expect people to understand you if you don't give them a view of who you are.
The info has to come from you to them somehow.
Yeah. And, you know, introverted people, we don't like, by nature, we don't broadcast ourselves. You know, we could have a million thoughts and have reflected on everything.
And said forward.
Obsessively. Right. And said forwards, 100%, you know. So I learned that in that first year, but then I hit a bit of a ceiling. I'm like, fuck, okay, this isn't going anywhere else. You know, I had taken, I think, 40 or so portraits in a year of people that I had never met, which was fantastic, and built me a portfolio. But I was like, what next? And it was funny because shallow depth of field, you know, we were just talking about this before we started the podcast. it's like it became a bit of an addiction, and it became my only aesthetic. And it was like, all I'm doing is taking shallow depth of field photos. And it's like, is that all you want to do with photography? No. You know, inherently, the social worker in me wanted to do more. You know, I wanted to have a social commentary going. I wanted my photography to be meaningful. And it was sort of like trying to figure that out, trying to figure that voice out.
How far after you started taking those portraits did that thought come in?
A year.
So you're doing this for a year, you're starting to get the technical skill down, and then you start realizing, hang on, like I'm doing this one thing over and over again.
Yeah, so which is, it was good.
Your level up is like,
I was like right before the level up, you know, and there was no like, this was before, this was all technical stuff. I had never done any research into photography theory. I'd never understood art theory. I've never understood history in general, you know? So I was just like, cool photos, cool photos, cool photos, cool photos. And then after a certain point, you're like, fuck, what's the point? Anyway, so I'm like, all right, I've hit a bit of a plateau. How do I get better? You know, my dad's a teacher. For me, it's always learning from other people's experiences. So I jump onto Google, where are the best universities, blah, blah, blah. I've already been to RMIT, so I know what that experience was like. You know, I'm like, felt like a number there. I don't want to go there. That's an option, but I don't want to go there. Anyway, so I found this other university, Photography Studies College. That's where I'm doing my final year now. Holy shit, you know, I found my people. I, you know, the first year was mainly technical stuff. The second year was good, but during COVID, so then I deferred, waited, started building the business more, doing other things commercially, which was great. Because then I went into, I came back, did second year again from scratch. And this whole time building myself and my perspectives about photography.
And coming back at it with more skill, more knowledge, more experience.
And having my own business to reflect the lessons onto. Do you know what I mean? Which was valuable thing.
Because people can learn shit and then
application.
There's no like, there's no practice.
No.
So it's like they learn it, how long do they keep it before it goes again?
Well, there's this thing as well. There's like all these young people, and this isn't just, you know, precise or specific to, I should say, photography industry, it's any industry. It's sort of like we need to be getting the practice while we've got the learning and while we've got access to the professionals, to the experts, you know? I sit in classes, and this was happening in second year, and it's still happening now. It's like I'm asking my tutors, and because the other thing is this university that I'm at, majority of the tutors, if not all of them, are practicing photographers or videographers. They're in the industry. So I'm being like, hey, I've got the situation with so-and-so. How do I deal with this? And it's not just like stiff stuff that's specific to the coursework. It's like, you know, oh, fuck, like I'm dealing with this client shit. Can you help me? And they help you. Or, hey, do you know so-and-so? And then you're...
Because they've been in the industry for so long, they're practicing, like they have this set of skills that maybe even you're not learning or you're going to learn later or...
Right. But also their networks, bro.
So it's like good mentors almost.
Mentor, 100%.
Yeah.
Mentors, the mentorship relation, mentor-mentee relationship is incremental to any kind of learning, right? And I think it's key regardless of the industry. For me, the other thing is this, is... When I leave this university, if I haven't built relationships with these people in the industry, like the tutors, the lecturers, and all the people associated with the university, you lose those networks if you haven't built the relationships. And a lot of times what happens is people are quite young, their first go at uni, same. Fucking my first go at uni, I wasn't doing this. But because I'd been through it already, I understood the value of it. You know, coming at uni at the age of, you know, what was I, 25, 26, I looked at it a lot differently. My being there was part of my business strategy. Do you know what I mean? And the other thing is, too, universities are businesses. They're making money.
That's true.
So we might as well get some benefit out of that. Do you know what I mean?
Like utilize what's there and what you have available.
Well, just build relationships. You don't have to get anything tangible out of it.
Yeah.
Build relationships with people without expectations. You know, anyone and everyone I will sit and speak to.
I had a teacher. I'm laughing because I had a teacher once that one of the lecturers is like, here's my email. When you graduate, please, Eamon, we want to work with you. You find through uni, like not only in the classmates, but within the lecturers, within the faculty even, there's, you know,
people you connect with.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is, when they said that to you, did you understand the value of that?
At the time, it was like, oh, I didn't actually, at that time, I didn't realize that, I didn't think I was like, it taught me something. Like, I didn't know it before that, but that situation goes, oh, okay, maybe I have some... And I've been in my industry for a long time and the studies only started recently. So like I knew that I'm not like the 18-year-olds in the class who are just getting into it. I know that I do have a lot of experience, but then going, oh damn, like even the lecturer is like sees value in that. So maybe I should explore that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I started talking to the research teams at the at the uni and stuff like that, and seeing what like high level social work looks like from like an academic perspective. You know,
whether
I go down that path or not. But like you said, the networks and the
You don't know. We don't know. Like my thing is this, and it's a very like I guess it comes back to my values and my roots and my old man is like doesn't matter who you're in the room with. Try and connect with them. You know, when I'm at the uni. Or anywhere I find myself. Obviously, I'm human. Yeah, I don't always do this, but when I feel like emotionally I can handle it, I do. I'll have a conversation with anyone. Janitor, doesn't matter. Hey, how's your day going? Person at the front desk. Hey, how's your day going? Understand the value of that conversation, not just in the context of business, but as a human being. Do you know what I mean? There are people in our lives that just pass through, and our capacity to be aware of the spaces that we're navigating. And the people that are in them and the fact that they have their own lives and they have their own shit going on. It's like an inherent empathy that I feel like we all need, but we tend to, it's not always possible to practice because it's exhausting sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're giving
and you're always, and you know, I'm not saying that we need to be doing that 100% of the time, always everywhere, but when we can, we should.
One of the best pieces of advice I got was like the same way everyone in your life are background characters to your story, like you're a background character to theirs. Like you're not the main character in other people's story. They're the main character in their story. It's a great analogy. So when you see it like that, you're like how interesting is it like in our life when someone comes or approaches and interacts and engages with us? You know, you think about that person, you know, you might form like a good, you know, working relationship or personal relationship, sometimes an intimate one, you know what I mean? Like so it's like if you do make the effort to be an interesting person in someone else's story, like you don't know where that can go, you know?
Well, we all, this is a thing, human beings, that's something my mom says all the time and I love it, is that people are always interested in their own story. And people are always interested in telling you their own story. But it's sort of like, how often are people interested in other people's stories? You know, and why can't we be those, the more people that are that person that's interested in someone else's story, the better the world becomes in a way, because it's sort of like, there's not enough people looking at other people's shit to try and see them. You know, we're looking at stuff, but we're not looking, or we're looking at stuff, but we're not seeing is a better way to put it. You know what I mean? It's like we pay attention, but we don't pay attention.
As a photographer and a good one, how do you experience that? Like what you just said about people of, you know, given the time and the space and the availability, they're very interested or very happy to tell their story, right? Even people who are introverted, they don't talk to people. Like if you give them the right environment and you give them the space,
they're hungry for it.
Yeah. Like, so what's been your experience? Like some lessons that you've learned or your experiences as a photographer, like creating that space and being behind the camera and creating environments for people to tell their stories.
It's an interesting, I'm glad that you phrased it that way, because it really is creating space for people. You know, I think obviously my social work background and my psych background give me the sort of the capacity to understand the value of creating space. And I think that's something that's lacking in a lot of photographers. I listen to a lot of photography podcasts, a lot of psych podcasts, and the best photographers in the world are ones that understand humans and relationships. They understand the value of understanding, of seeing the person in front of you as a human first and foremost before anything, irrespective of whether or not they get the photo. You know, one of the biggest lessons I learned, and I guess it's inherent to who I am and my values, thanks mom and dad, is that first and foremost, the person in front of me is a person. It doesn't matter if they're the CEO of a fashion label. It doesn't matter if they're the janitor of the university that I work at. It doesn't matter if they're cleaning the toilet, because that could be any of us at any time. So first and foremost, that respect. And the other thing is I'm a people watcher. I've always been. I think introverts tend to be, you know, not in a creepy way, but in like, I like observing the people's
experience,
lives.
Yeah, the experience.
You know what I mean? I mean, you like street photography, right? Like the fun part about street photography is that you the beautiful thing about that is you're giving yourself time with no other agenda than just to observe. But observe people when they're being their most authentic selves.
They're doing their thing.
They're running to work, or they're going to get a coffee, or they're walking their dog, or whatever the fuck. People, you know, they're not thinking about the fact that they're not performing in that moment. They're not performing for society. They're not performing for
an institution they're trying to impress, or a girlfriend, or whatever it is. They are just being them. And they are so unaware of the observer. I know there's this weird thing about observing people where it's kind of like when you do it in a non-facetious way. Yeah, when you do it in a way with no negative agenda, no like wanting to take advantage of people, it's just observing and being able to appreciate a person living their life in an authentic way. There's something beautiful about that. Do you know what I mean? And it's sort of like it comes back to that idea of what we were talking about before, like performance. You know, we're all performing constantly. We don't talk about it. We don't think about it. Identity is performative, period. Like we learn it. But in those moments where people are being their authentic selves, they're just doing them. And isn't that what we want to see?
Yeah. You said something even before we started recording that was really interesting. And we're talking about the street photography. You said speaking, you know, like there are some photographers that, like you're talking about now, capture this moment in time where people are being authentic, whether it's, you know, getting their coffee or et cetera, et cetera, all the things that you mentioned. But there are some photographers that engage with their subject.
Or I like to say collaborator, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. We'll get onto that. But the people or the photographers that engage with the people they're taking photos of. But the interesting thing, you said it like just offhandedly, but I feel like it's so important. It's like being okay with maybe not getting that picture.
Oh my God, that's the king.
And it's like when you just said now, you know, respecting these people as people before they become subjects.
Yeah.
It connected to that of like having a conversation with some of these people and just asking, like, you know, engaging with them. And then if they're not comfortable being okay with not getting that thing that you wanted as the photographer, like, or getting that picture, it's like, that's a really interesting aspect, you know, of like seeing them as people and showing that respect. Because obviously, like, as a photographer, you're getting an image, you're getting something, you know, whether it's to build your portfolio or to go on a gallery wall or whatever, even if it's just for a collection or whatever the case is, okay. Like we're getting something from them.
Can I link this?
Yeah.
Can I link this? Please. Okay. I'm reading a book at the moment. It's called The Civil Contract of Photography. It's by this lady called Ariella Azule.
That sounds amazing.
Fantastic book. I'll get you onto it. It's thick as fuck. Yeah. It is quite hard for people to decipher, but with social work backgrounds, I think we'll be okay. For anyone though, I'd encourage anyone who's up for it to go after it. My research tutor said just a bit of light reading, hey, and then laughed. But I think the thing is this. Yeah, there's photography has a history. Photography has a shit history of really being violent against people. And not violent in a physical sense, but violent in the context of what an image does. There's a very, very great case study of a photograph taken by a lady called Dorothea Lange. Now, she's a renowned, historical, huge figure in the photography scene. Like, this is like years and decades ago. But what she did was she went around America and took photos of the poverty in the world. This is before, you know, ethics on photography. Yeah. Maybe was being discussed as much as it is now, you know, and she took a photo of this lady called, I apologize for the people that fact checked this. I might get the name wrong. Her name was Florence Thompson. Now she took this photo of this mother with her two kids became prolifically famous, like so famous. But what ended up happening was the image of this woman and herself in poverty in quite a very difficult, vulnerable situation made Dorothea Lange famous. What did it do for Florence Thompson? Fuck all. She had no control over what happened to that image afterwards. This is why the ethics of photography is so important. It's maybe something we don't think about as much now.
Can you, for those that aren't in that world, can you give us, like, now, what does that look like in terms of, like, photography, homeless people, et cetera?
Well, this is the thing, right? It's fucking homelessness porn. You know? We've got these photographers going around, and I guess it comes back to this idea of power dynamics, vulnerability, social positioning. If you don't know what any of those things are, I apologize. They're complex concepts. But I think they're so key to this thinking because we need to understand that being the photographer, you're in a position of privilege. No matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, photography is kind of an act of violence, right? It's this thing where you're taking someone's image and you're making that forever. But what are the consequences of making that forever? What happens to that image afterwards? Who does it belong to? What are the ramifications? How is it going to be used? These are all things that we need to be considering.
Mm.
But what ends up happening is people that want to get popular take a really cool photo of someone who's homeless, put it on Instagram. They're getting all the fucking likes. Oh, yeah, this is an amazing photo. What happened to the dude that was homeless, bro? Mm. Have you helped his life in any way by creating that image, or have you just inflated your own ego?
You've just taken from a person.
You've taken from them.
Literally,
he's got nothing. He's got nothing, and you're taking advantage of him.
Okay.
It's gross.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I can understand the appeal of someone who doesn't have maybe the education of or the history of photography or hasn't taken the time. And I understand the ignorance. I don't think that's an excuse, but fair enough. Yeah, it is what it is. People are going to take photos whether they've done the research or not.
Mm.
You know, I guess I want to inform my photography and create images in such a way that tries to reconcile. It never will, but I will try to reconcile that power imbalance.
Mm.
The power imbalance that happens between the person who is behind the camera and in front of the camera. This is an endless conversation in photography theory that's never
super deep. Even never even I don't consider like to that depth.
Mm.
Like, you, I know the basic the basic ethics taking advantage of your subject and stuff. But, looking at it from that deep perspective, because also something that just occurred to me is the flip side of the coin, for example, of like, okay, like, yeah, we're going to take a photo of this person, but we're going to give him $100 or whatever, like to help him out. But then they record that as well. And then they also post that.
Is that altruistic? Is that altruistic, like, or is that for themselves?
That's where the, like,
it's manipulative, really.
Like, not only are you taking a photo, you're also, for your YouTube channel, uploading a video of you giving this guy money, and that's how that thing started. Yeah.
Everyone claps for this person. Pat someone like, oh, you're fucking amazing. Good on you. You're doing great in the world. But what are you doing?
Also, the thing that you're doing to quote-unquote help is also, like, another way that they take advantage of this person.
Can I tell you how fucked up this is?
Yeah.
Because giving someone who's homeless $100 is actually not necessarily the most helpful thing you can do.
Sure.
People in this position, we don't understand what their life has been, what their habits are, what their behaviors are. If you give an addict $100, what happens when you give a drug addict $100?
Most likely, by assumption, they're going to feed their addiction.
I don't mean this in a way that's degrading or condescending towards the person who's homeless. They're in that position because of their life experiences, and it's really fucking unfortunate.
Mm.
But if you enable someone who doesn't know how to regulate their own capacity or regulate themselves and their behavior, that's problematic. You're not helping that person.
Mm.
Now, these people that are giving these people $100, and I've done it before too, I didn't understand the ramifications of my behaviors or my actions. I'm not saying don't help people. Fucking enough, help people. Get to know them, help them, support them, but understand that this isn't something that you can just chuck money at.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is a lifelong thing that they've gone through. They need long-term support.
That's one thing. But I mean, even capturing that and using that as content is that's like another level of shittiness.
That's all fucked up. Like, I can't.
Like, it's like you're like being super ethical about it. You're like, you know, ramifications of just throwing money at a problem. And I'm like, no. These guys are like recording it.
Yeah, yeah. And
they'll take the photo for their photography, you know, crew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then they'll be like, oh, look, I'm also helping him by giving him money. Then getting someone to record that and then also using that.
What's it? This is
like four levels of shit.
Four levels of shit. 40 shades of shit. Yeah, no, totally. But that's self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
And this is why having no agenda with what I'm doing is so important to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I want to do things. I want to achieve things. I have plans and goals, and I do have some form of agenda. I'm okay with not fulfilling that agenda if it means that I'm going to be doing right by the person and that I'm sitting
ethical,
with.
Yeah.
That should be at the core of every photographer's work.
Mm.
You know, it should be the person first, the culture first, the human first, and then everything else. Because photographs, you know what? They're not that important. That, like, do you know what I mean? The moment you realize that, the moment that you realize that you are not the most important thing in the world,
you decenter yourself. It's not.
It shouldn't be about us. And this is actually something that I think you understand very well. You gave that analogy to me about, you know, trying to support people who have, you know, less privilege in life than us. Because I think the other thing is, you know, I'm a male. That affords me some degree of privilege in this world. And how do we support people who don't have that privilege without making ourselves the center of that support?
Yeah.
You know, that analogy about, well, I'm gonna butcher it. You gotta say it.
So I said that, you know, if society dictates as a person of privilege that I own this building, I was born with the keys in my hand, instead of like using the building to run what I think is important, it's important for me to unlock the door and allow people with not as much privilege to run what they think they need. So that if I'm running, like we're using the building as an analogy, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. if I'm running what I think is important for people without privilege, then I'm centering myself mm-hmm. and what I think and using, mm-hmm. it's weird because you're looking at it from a position of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So unlocking the door, creating a platform,
mm-hmm.
which this, for example, this podcast is very much that. It's not about, even though I'm the host, but it's not about me as a person. It's like, how can I work to elevate the guests, their work, their opinions? Like, yeah, sometimes we talk and question and go on tangents and kind of like work together to figure out what that looks like in, you know, the world. But I guess this podcast is like about all of, I try and, it will never happen to capture the whole human experience, but it's a lifelong goal to continue to search. So it's about elevating others. It's about creating a platform where others can, I don't like the analogy of like, you know, people use it very negatively, but like stepping on your back in order to, but it's like,
you want to be the back. You want to be the back.
Yeah, you know, when you give someone a boost, like when you cup your hands and you like, like sometimes their dirt gets on you and that's okay. It's like, whatever, brush it off. Like, you know what I mean?
Help them anyway.
It's about elevating others. So.
Help them anyway.
Yeah, totally. That was the analogy you were speaking
about. I love it. Because I think it's sometimes it's hard for all of us because of our life experience to have the capacity to articulate something in our head. Like, you can have it up there, but getting it out eloquently is very hard.
Yeah, I use a lot of metaphors.
You know, I'm all about metaphor. You see my photography. But for real, like, sometimes you need to hear it from someone else and phrase it in a certain way because they have the capacity to be able to articulate it in the way that you'd like to.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to bust your balls trying to learn that analogy because I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it reminded me of something that I listened to in another podcast. I don't know if you've heard of Dare to Lead by Brené Brown.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, her podcast, she had this lady, I can't remember her name. They were talking about inclusivity. Mm. And she was talking about, you know, an instance, a case study she uses in her book, which I passed on to a couple of people, was talking about how Marilyn Monroe supported Ella Fitzgerald, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the way she did it is very similar to your analogy.
Mm.
It was this idea of, okay, Marilyn Monroe's famous. There's all these venues that want her to play at those venues. Yeah.
Mm.
No one wants Ella Fitzgerald to perform. Now, we know now Ella Fitzgerald's voice is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. One of the best. Yeah. One of the best. But back then, racism, the era, all this shit. Those people were like, nah, we don't want her to perform. We don't want her to perform. So Marilyn Monroe said, hey, look, she helped Ella Fitzgerald. She was like, hey, look, to the venue managers, be like, hey, look, let her perform. If you let her perform, I will come in every night she's performing, and sit in the front row.
Right.
I'll be there.
Mm.
And my presence in itself.
Yeah. That's so what you get from me. The venue is benefiting from Marilyn Monroe attending all of these.
That's right.
Hey, look, how many shows she came to.
That's right.
But she's using...
She's using her platform, but not in a way that takes away from...
Yeah, she's not centering herself.
That's right.
Like, hey, Ella can open for me.
No. It's Ella's show. Yeah, she's performing. It's Ella's show. She needs the platform. Give it to her.
Mm.
I'll be here. And she's like, nah, I'm not like...
Yeah,
I'm
not gonna perform.
It's not about me.
Yeah,
it's about her.
Yeah.
And, you know, beautifully, that relationship's quite beautiful.
Because
it's like, it's someone who is in their craft, who wants to use their position and their privilege to help someone else get past institutional barriers.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, we don't choose the social position that we're born into. We just are. We just choose how we navigate that social position and how we use it. You know, use it to our advantage or our detriment. Or to help people around us or not. Like, I'm a big, like me, one of my favorite things is seeing my friends succeed.
Mm.
Whatever that is. You're a builder, beautiful. Fuck, you built a house, amazing. I love it. You know, you're a musician, you wrote a new album, fucking amazing. I love it. I want to see everyone around me succeed. I don't want to see people,
But you have to understand, bro, that's also very rare.
How is that rare?
It's not that it should be rare. It is rare. Because, let me explain.
Please, I'm going to shut up.
One of the... To help someone else and to use the privilege, we use that word, that you have to elevate someone else without centering yourself needs a death of ego. there has to be no ego in it. Because let's say, hypothetically, this person knows that this is the right way to do things, right? Let's use Monroe, Ella Fitzgerald example. If Marilyn Monroe, for example, in this circumstance, had ego, and she knows what she did exactly the same thing, but she knew that's the right thing to do, and that's why she did it. But there's an ego there. As she's sitting in the front row watching Ella perform, there's still jealousy there. There's still like a anger. There's still like a thing there, right? It needs a death of ego. And death of ego comes from being very introspective and looking internally and understanding like, okay, even if I do feel like shit about this thing, like that's also not okay. That's also not right. What's causing that thing? Where's that coming from? What childhood trauma is that? You know what I mean?
I don't think it's possible to be completely devoid of ego, bro. It's all part of us.
No, we have ego.
I think we're going to have that jealousy. And I get it too. We all get it.
Yeah.
It's not having... All right, go, sorry.
Not jealousy. I'll use a different word. Envy, right? Because jealousy is like, I want that thing as well. Mm. Envy is, I want that thing and I don't want you to have that thing.
Yes. Okay?
So maybe envy is a better word.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like to do that, like to do the right thing and to do it for the right reasons, I feel like are not two different things, but there's more of a nuance in it. Like when you go, I want to see my friend succeed, like that's a beautiful sentiment. But you have to be, I think more people need to be healthier in themselves and work on that. Like that's selfless. Like it's not just about like me succeeding and me getting, you know, and again... We're not going to go into the whole capitalism and it's all about you and succeeding. Yeah, and it's we're not going to go into that, because that's another several hour conversation. But that's the society we live in, right? Mm. It's about like the hustle culture, the grind, the getting ahead. And
but you can hustle and not be a cunt. Sorry.
Yeah.
You can hustle and not be super selfish.
Yeah. But we're saying like, what does it take to get there? Like the internal structure of a person needs to be like, the fact that understanding privilege, like we're not going to mention names or cultures or lack of culture, but there are certain people that have the privilege or the keys to the building and they're like, but doesn't everyone have keys? Like they don't even know that they're in a privileged position. Like we're talking like several levels deep.
You're
like, we're at a point like we're talking about recognizing that like whether I like it or not, this building is in my name.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. How can I use it in a way that benefits those with less privilege,
mm-hmm.
and also not make myself the center of it?
Mm-hmm.
So there are three different things. Understanding that you have the privilege. Number two, deciding to elevate those without. And number three, also not making yourself the center of the privilege in the elevation of someone else. That's three different things.
Yeah, they're three layers, bro.
It's depth, right?
I see things. This myself, I don't see. You know? And I think that's a big part of me not trying to feed that ego.
Well, that's good. I'm just saying, like, to do that to that extent, it requires that. For some people, it comes more... I won't say it's natural. I think it takes work.
It's definitely work.
But I think it takes more. Some people are more... You know, and again, it comes to our upbringing and how we, you know, when we see that, if we see that modeled by the people around us, if we grew up around people that are just naturally driving each other to succeed in a beautiful, healthy way, you had a good group of friends growing up that were always supportive. And this is so rare, man. Like, it's not a common thing, you know?
Totally.
So, yeah, respect to where respect is due. Like, it takes effort and it takes time to... want to see someone else succeed, even if you get nothing out of it. Like, that's huge.
I appreciate that. I guess I would rather not think about that as
something that was the hardest I ever had to work to give someone a compliment.
No, I appreciate that. And that's another thing. That's something I need to work on, you know? Like, and I think we've all got these things. That shit's never ending. Personal growth.
Of course. It's a marathon. It's a lifelong journey. It's not like a thing that you can do and go, okay, I've graduated now.
It never ends. And you know, it's interesting. Actually, I want to come back to this. Sorry, before I go on to that tangent. We'll have to forget about that tangent. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, which was having dreams that are, like, they seem unachievable. You know, you mentioned that you want to create a platform, and I love this.
Mm.
It's
So I want to underline it, you know, because I've got my own version of this that drives me. You know, you want to create a platform where you have the perspectives of everyone, you know, in the world. That's quite a big endeavor. You know, and you said it yourself, maybe I'll never finish in my lifetime. But we have to have dreams that are that big. We have to have lifelong dreams. We have to, and when we find them, we need to hold on to them, you know? Like for me, being a magnum photographer, I don't know, people that don't that aren't part of photography scene or might not understand this.
Yeah.
Basically, Magnum's like an agency in the US and around the world that are like the top tier of documentary photographers in the world. And my dream is I'm going to be a Magnum photographer one day. That's a huge dream. That's a big, there's like two of them in Australia. You know what I mean? Or even maybe just one. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But I don't care at how ridiculous that dream is to the everyday. You know, once upon a time, being a photographer was a ridiculous dream as well. And here I am. I've got my own business. I've got my own clients. I recently had work featured in a couple very big publications, architectural publications, which I look at it and I go, oh, that's cool, but it could be better. but it's, you know, if I told that to myself when I had quit my you know, counseling job, I would have been like, holy fuck, I love that shit. And
yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
But, you know, we always want more. We're humans. We're always going to aim for more. But I think there needs to be an underlying thing that drives us. And the people that I've respected most in this life, you know, that I've met along the way and I've gotten to have conversations with, got close with, worked with, they've always got the underlying huge, huge dream that they're always chasing, that they're always going to chase. Gary Vee's got one. Was it the Mets?
Own the Jets.
There you go. Own the Jets. He's going to own the Jets. He doesn't give a fuck. No, he's not having a bar of it.
Yeah.
He's going to own the Jets. And then he's like, when he's asked about it, he's like, what's going to happen when you're going to get there? He's like, I'm going to have another fucking dream. That's ridiculous. And I'm going to do that as well.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to stop. And neither do I. And I guess neither do you. You know, and we might quit and shift and we might like sidestep to go another direction maybe, but it's still going to be that big.
I think like a good, and this is Eamon with his social work
company. Please, always.
When you have like, there's this drive, it's a balance, right? We want to achieve. And what can happen with massive dreams is if that's the only driving factor, we can burn out, right? And burnout is very real. Now, also, so some people are like on this end of the spectrum where they just grind, drive, whatever. And then you have people on the other end of the spectrum that are awake for 8 hours of the day only. They spend a lot of time sleeping. We're not saying like people with mental health and all of this stuff. We're not talking about it. We're just talking about people with a lack of ambition. They're just existing.
Yeah.
There are some people like that, right? I find that a good, obviously, everything balanced is balanced, right? When we find balance. If you're trying, like David Goggins said, if you're trying to be the absolute best in the world at something, that's, you have to be almost insane, right? And if you've watched like The Last Dance on Netflix, Michael Jordan's doco, you realize like this isn't just normal ambition. This is like
Obsessive,
right?
Totally.
But we're not talking about, we're talking about
normal.
Normal. We're talking about normal, right?
We know it doesn't exist. But just for the
We're talking about balance. I find the good space for balance is striving for perfection in something, but being okay with never achieving that. You get what
I mean? But not giving up.
No. Yeah, but you're striving for
perfection. Yeah, but you're going to keep going. Like,
but the not giving up is the striving for perfection.
Yeah, right.
The, I did this thing, it's 80% good. That's and still putting it out. That's the
accepting
compromise. I'm okay with not perfecting it because you have two ends of the spectrum, right? You have the quote unquote perfectionists, which is majority of the time people using perfectionism as a procrastination
excuse.
Tool.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm never gonna.
It needs to be right.
Yeah, it needs to be perfect. Right. Nah. It's like, bro, what do you mean perfect? Like, your stuff is still in boxes. You haven't even started yet. What do you mean perfect, right? Totally. So they use it as an excuse. So, yeah, I feel like that analogy is, like, really good for, like, it's a good balance, right? It's a, like, you're striving for perfection. So while you're working on the thing, you're trying to make it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're done with the mm-hmm. thing, whether it's your photo, your song, yeah, whatever product you've done or mm-hmm. whatever it is that you've made or created,
mm-hmm.
just putting it out there and trusting the process that you will get better as you go on.
There's no end. I think this is something that I've realized about work. There's no end to a project. There's no, it's done. You're always working on it. It's always getting better. And it could always be better. The beauty is in the process of the making and the process of the fine tuning and the process of the going back at it tomorrow, getting frustrated, breaking it down, throwing it out, you know, getting mad, coming back to it 2 months later, whenever. Doesn't have to be a specific time frame. I think that for me, the most important thing is my momentum. You know, those everyday routines, those everyday habits, those the do it again tomorrow. It's beautiful. Like one of these things that I love, that when I make something good and I show people that I'm really close with and that understand my mentality, they look at it and go, it's fantastic. Do it again. More. And it's not a, this isn't good enough. It's a, no, this is great. Let's celebrate this being great. And this is something I've got to work on, celebrating my achievements.
It's a common thread. Like one of my friends, Serene, she's a producer. We did an episode recently as well that is out already. And she talked about that. the way I actually discovered her, like she's a visibly Muslim music producer. Mm-hmm. She had a billboard in Times Square. So in the interview, I bring that out. I'm like, hey, like, so tell us about what it was like, about the billboard. She's like, what the hell? Like, she goes, so many things were happening at that time.
Yeah.
I never actually, until you just mentioned that now, I never stopped to celebrate that. Like, this massive, you know. So I find that people that are on that grind and on that drive, they forget, like, you have to.
Yeah.
Because that is a part of the enjoyment. That's going to lessen that.
You know what it is? I think personally for me, I can't speak for anyone else. For me, it's a fear that I'm going to lose from the momentum and that the ego is going to take over. I don't want to feed the ego, you know? I want to keep making the work. For me, the making the work is more important than the work.
Yeah.
The process of creating, the continuation of my craft, my practice, that's more important to me than any accolades. And I'm going to do this. This is the beautiful thing about finding the thing that you love in life and that you know that you're going to commit to for the rest of your life. I'm doing this for the rest of my life. What's my fucking hurry? I want to be able to, I want to be able to do this for the rest of my life. If I can't, for whatever reason, touch wood, I don't know what's going to happen in life. I will find a way to relate what I'm doing to this, but I've got this conviction in myself. And this is something that I know I had when I left my job. And the way that I understood it was through a metaphor or analogy was, there's a dog that's got lockjaw on my arm, like a black dog. Yeah. It's got lockjaw. It's not letting go. And that lockjaw is my conviction with this craft. And to this day, that dog hasn't waned. It's still on my arm. It's a conviction, and it's a, I don't know how to verbalize it. It's like this, I refuse to give up on that. And it's stubborn. It's persistent as fuck.
I'll offer a point for that.
Please.
So you mentioned before, you were like, one of the things that I fear is, and it's a lot of people, and I've heard this many times before, is like the momentum, like things, you know, like the fear of like ego and momentum creeping in and taking away from that drive and that. Like the fact that you're thinking like that, like I think there needs to be more. And look, I could be wrong. And I'll also give you a point of why I could be wrong. I'm going to counter myself in a second. I'm going to give you a point and then counter it.
So you do my job for me.
the fact that you're thinking like that is an indicator that you're aware and you're like, there should be like I feel like there should be like people who are very creative in that way. And that is a common fear. There should be a trust in the thing that's making you think that is going to prevent the loss of momentum and the ego creeping in. Just like people who say, I'm terrified of having kids and I want to make sure, like, you know, this world and all of that stuff, like that thought process is also what's going to make them a great parent. Okay. Now
it's very great.
Yeah.
I like that. It's a valid point.
That's that fear. I forgot the counter.
That's okay. We can let it go. You can let it go. It's all good.
I want to come back to something interesting about collaborating with between the photographer and the subject. And you said collaboration, and not any collaboration, true collaboration. The funny thing is, even before I met you, I use the words true collaboration a lot because I feel like...
A buzzword now.
It's such a buzzword.
Big buzzword.
And with the advent, advent of influencers in social media, I'm picking my words very carefully. Influencers within social media, the words collaboration is a very nice way to say, give me shit so that I can promote you. Like, let's work together for free, whatever the case is, hundreds of variations of deals people have. But it's like, I'm going to give you money. I'm going to put my logo on your shit. And then you're going to promote your thing. But for me, because it looks good for both of us, whatever. But
when someone says to me, if they come to me with collab, I'm judging you.
Yeah, not even don't come the full to me word. With collab. Hey, you want to collab?
No, fuck off. And this is, look, and I'll be honest, like, this is something that I only recently became aware of through reading and through some incredible, incredible teachers that I've had at this university. Because, look, man, like, whenever there's a breakthrough in thinking or ideology, there is always going to be people who try and take advantage of it and shift it and twist it in a way that's going to meet their own agenda. You know, collaboration, unfortunately, has become this thing, you know, that became popularized now and is like being, people say nice things to take advantage of other people. They learn the right words to say to be able to get their own agenda met, you know?
Similar to what I was mentioning before, like, they know the right thing that they should do, but if inside there's no sincerity in the intention, then it becomes like it can become this toxic thing.
Put it very well, sincerity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm willing to walk away from images that I've made with people, and I say this here. I know it's going to go out. That's fine. You can pull me up on this later if I'm not doing this. I'm okay to walk away from an image if it doesn't. If the person in the image isn't happy with it, doesn't want it out there, within my control.
Mm.
Obviously, like, I get waiver signed. Within reason. You know, I can't, like, if, let's say, for example, I create an image with someone, they have signed the waiver, they're happy with it, and then it goes out into the world and then it becomes a massive thing. That's not in my control anymore. You've already said yes. You've signed it. Yalla. Like, but within my control, if I can pull shit down, I will. With my control, if I can do things, I will. Because I think that goes with my values. But I guess I've diverted a little bit. Let's come back to collaboration. So for me, when I first started creating images with people, it was me learning, but me also talking to people and obviously social work coming in. It's like, hey, are you okay with this? Hey, this, hey, that, like checking in constantly. But then I was listening to a guest speaker recently at uni talk about collaboration. And it's something that we're constantly thinking about. And she said, it's my job to understand visual language. That's my profession. That's my expertise. Collaboration doesn't have to be something like, I'm taking your photo here, take control of the camera. It's not literal.
Okay.
Collaboration can be something that is in the development of the image, in the development of the concept, in the development of the space where we cede control to the person we're working with in terms of making creative decisions. It's like, it's my capacity. It's my job to know how to use the camera, how to use lights, how to do composition. That's my job.
Mm.
The person that I'm working with, they may not have the years of education at university to understand visual language and the history of photography. I don't need that from them for them to have a say or control in the process. It's like one of my favorite photographers, Alex Soth, talks about ceding control to a certain degree. It's kind of like a dance. You do it together. It's my job to lead at some points, because that's my expertise. And if they take lead in that point, the thing's going to fuck up.
Mm.
But in that dance, it's also important to be able to be aware of what's going on for the partner that you're dancing with, the collaborator that you're working with, and understand how their expertise and capacity can add to what we're doing together. You know? Like, It's a weird thing. And there's no definitions in terms of measurements or quantifications or rules, but it's sort of like when you have intuitive capacity to understand people, you can navigate that a lot better. Navigate the situation, navigate the degree to which you're ceding control. Because a lot of it's about letting go, right?
But knowing when.
When to let go. How. Yeah, and facilitate. It's like being a facilitator.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I don't get this perfect right now. I probably never will, but I'm going to keep trying to the best I can. And that may change over time.
Mm.
You know, for me right now, it's like.
Let me ask you another question that will help answer that question.
Yeah.
Let's say you go down this path of like exploring what true collaboration means and stuff, like magic wand moment. Like, what does that look like in 10 years, for example? Like, you've gotten 10 years of experience and learning and made the mistakes and all of that stuff. And you're at a point now where you're confident. Like, again, magic wand. Like, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. Not just for you, but for all artists or all photographers. Like, what is the ideal collaborative situation?
Mm.
Paint me a picture.
Firstly, you're such a social worker. Like, just your magic wand moment at me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of funny because I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
Magic wand moment. I think, to be honest with you, dude, it's kind of like what I'm doing now with this project.
Mm.
You know? And I don't think it's ever going to get to a place where it's going to be perfect because I don't think the situation's reconcilable. Mm. I'm going to continue working at it.
But ideally, even with this project,
True collaboration is the thing that we aim for.
Okay, what are you aiming for? It's the big goal. What does it look like? What's the visualization? Because
It's sort of like, let's say, for example, I had this idea. Okay, let me give people a bit of context of what I'm doing now with this current project so they can understand.
Yeah, yeah. And we can use it as examples and stuff. Yeah.
So this current project that I'm doing now, it started off me taking photos around Meta Heights, creating images of things that remind me of Turkey, of like the minarets of the mosque, you know, looking up and then seeing a seagull fly between them. It reminds me of Istanbul, you know, by the Bosphorus. You know, there's birds, there's people fishing, there's all this shit, you know, happening. So I did that and I created a book out of that, my first dummy version of a book. And then I was like, okay, cool. This is nice. It's kind of like street photography, but what am I saying with this? It was kind of like, I feel like, and this is an interesting segue. It's sort of like when you're making a creative project, first it's sort of this baby and it doesn't really know what it's saying and what it's doing. And then it grows a little bit the more you work at it.
Mm.
And then it's a toddler. And then it can say words, but it's not really like putting sentences together yet.
Mm.
And then so on and so forth. Do you know what I mean? So the more time you put into it, the more it becomes developed, the more it can actually articulate what you want it to articulate.
That's a really cool analogy, actually. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us, we get angry at the baby because it's not saying what we want it to say. We know we want it to say X.
Yeah.
It's saying, eh. It's going to get X out eventually.
Yeah.
But it's not there yet. And then we get frustrated and we leave it and put it away and yell at ourselves. You know, but you need to let that baby grow. You know,
As well a better teacher to the child. Like, as time goes on, not only do they grow from the time and effort
you put
into it, but you become a better teacher and you become a better fosterer of that baby, right? You grow, they grow. Mm. Like, yeah, okay. Anyway, I like this.
So this project, right? It was like, it looked kind of like street photography. I kind of knew what it wanted to be. Basically, it was going to be looking at the idea of cultural identity. Doesn't have to be specifically Turkish culture, but that's my culture, so that's what I'm talking about. I just want it to be about the experience of being someone whose family has left the country of origin. They're in this new place. You know, their family's holding on to the country of origin and the culture, whether that's Turkish, Lebanese, Egyptian, Italian, Greek, whatever that is, which is a lot of stories for a lot of people in Melbourne. How they try and hold on to that culture, and that trying to hold on becomes part of the identity of the person here.
Mm.
And then that disconnect, but when you go to the old country, you're not part of there. When you come here, you're not part of here.
Mm.
And you are part of this. It's like some photographers talk about it as being the perpetual outsider.
Mm.
You know, and that's been my experience. You know, I'm here, I'm Turkish, I'm Muslim, you know, but I was born here in Australia. Mm. I'm not Australian enough.
Yeah, this is what
I go back to Turkey. Before, I'm from Australia. Yeah. I'm not Turkish enough.
We're talking about before about this idea of third culture. It's like, you know, me being, having Egyptian heritage, but being born in Australia, I'm not white enough to be Australian. And if I go to Egypt, I'm not Egyptian enough to be Egyptian. It's like, what's this weird place in the middle? It's like this third culture.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're a generation of people that are figuring out what that means for us.
Mm.
Like, we're not neither here, we're neither, and we're both.
At the same time.
At the same time, which is, it's a, it's a crazy thing.
It's a very unique thing. I love it.
Mm.
I love it, but it does torment me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, throughout life, it's not something that's easy to carry.
Well, the neither is the hard part, and the both is the beautiful like aspect, right? Mm. Yeah.
There's a duality to it. There's a duality to it, 100%. So this project that I'm doing now, it's on that, you know? It's trying to create portraits and create a multi-layered piece of work that speaks to that experience, but I don't want to speak to it in a way that only people from Middle Eastern backgrounds can relate to. I want it to speak to it in a way that everyone can see parts of their own lives in the work. I want this work to be a bridge, you know, between cultures. Because I think, and this is the other thing, you know, when I first started out, I was just taking beautiful pictures of beautiful people with no necessary social commentary or function. But the social worker inside of me is like, nah, bro, like this there is what you want to be doing. There needs to be a function. There needs to be more there.
Yeah.
What's the point? I remember having this amazing epiphany moment. It was the ending of first semester, second year, last year. And I'd just been working on this doco with this great cinematographer who's putting me on. He's one of my mentors, legend. And we were going to all these remote places in Victoria and creating these documentary videos for this streaming service, which we're going to make it a series, right? I was assisting and then I ended up doing the principal photography for it as well. And then I made that my folio, two birds, one stone, right? Like, yeah. I'm like, I didn't have time to do another folio. So I made that my folio, made these really beautiful big prints. No one else had printed that big. I spent a lot of money on it, put them up. And I remember I was reading this book at the time on creative theory. And I do this thing where I go to, when I'm going to go to uni, I'll go to a cafe first, do my reading for the day, do my journaling, and then I'll go to class a bit more collected.
Mm.
Yeah, I remember finishing that book that day, and my tutor at the time was trying to get into my head, like, I was thinking I was going to be a commercial major.
Mm.
Yeah, this is before I even thought about the social work side of me wanting to be part of my photography.
Commercial photography.
Commercial photography. Yeah, just a commercial major, commercial photography, like, yeah. I'm going to make money, I'm going to do this, and whatever, and I was making really beautiful images. And I remember finishing that book and getting to the front door with my prince and my tutor. And I was like to her, and it was sort of like, you know, when you have an epiphany moment, it's almost like someone punched you in the nose and you're walking around like you're seeing stars a little bit. You're on a different planet.
You're just like
oh, fuck. Yeah, that feeling.
That's why they use the light bulb as like thing. It's because it's almost like a light bulb, right? Yeah. It's like something that is different. Like,
but
it's lit up in your head.
It's accumulative, right? Like, this woman had been kind of like in her own way telling me this the whole time that she's been my tutor. It's like, there needs to be more to what you're doing. Like, she didn't say it like that.
Yeah.
Like, she was trying to guide me to it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see it.
Because if she just told you, then the message wasn't getting in anyway.
But she was trying really fucking hard. Like, poor lady. Fucking hell, she was trying.
Right. But that epiphany is almost like the tipping moment for the moment that you go from, you know, -2, -1, 0, 1. Like, that moment is like that. Between 0 and 1 is like that.
Do you know what it was? I needed to do that commercial work and prove that to myself to be able to see what it was. And when I put the prints up, everyone was like, amazing, fuck, these are incredible, like, holy shit. Because no one else was printing that big. And it was nice. But I was like, shit feels empty to me now.
And then? Yeah.
Like, this.
Because you're like, and then? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, so what? They're beautiful. Yeah, so what? Like, the disgusting thing is, to other people's work, that's just beautiful for the sake of being beautiful, which I love too. I can look at it and go, fuck, it doesn't need to be anything else. This is incredible.
Yeah. Like, their purpose is appreciation of the beauty.
100%. Me? Of course not.
Yeah. What's next? You know
what
I mean?
What is this doing? Like, what is the function of this in the world, in life? What's, like, what am I doing with this?
So how do you connect that to this current project now?
How do I connect that to this current project? Well, that epiphany moment, then that's when this thinking started.
Right.
That's when I was like, nah, I've already got the commercial work. I'm already part of the industry that on that side in terms of making money. Like, I need to be making work that feeds my soul and feeds other people's souls and helps heal.
Is it like, because you almost like prove to yourself, like, yeah, I can do that. I just want to make sure.
I gave myself permission after that.
Yeah.
Because I think that was always the thing, is that I'd loved photojournalistic work or I guess it's called expanded documentary, the stuff that I do. Long form research projects that aren't necessarily just about the photography, they're about the narrative, but they use photography as the medium for the narrative. Yeah. So then there was that shift and I was like, fuck, okay. I can do the commercial work, but I can do this shit too. And in fact, I do the commercial work to allow me to do this shit. So the project that I'm working on now, basically, it's going to be a photo book. It's going to have a bunch of different layers. It's going to have letters that were written from a mother to her daughter who migrated here. I've got 30 years of letters from my grandmother to my mother.
That's amazing.
And the letters are going to inform the images.
Yeah.
And things in the images.
Right, right, okay.
That's one layer. Those letters are going to run through the book. There's also portraits that I'm taking with people. I'm you know, going into their spaces. I've done it with my family. I'm doing it with a bunch of other people where I will be setting up sort of a scene. Then we create a portrait together, collaboratively.
Right? Wink.
Wink. That's going to be another element that's going to hang in at. And then I've got images that I've taken in Izmir on the trips that I've taken, and then sort of when I started loving photography, street photography, a bunch of different stuff, I'll be putting that into it, and then it's going to grow, and there's sort of like a bunch of different layers to it. Basically, it's going to be about that story of you know, being part of those two worlds, being part of neither, and that experience of grief that we have, because I think this is the biggest thing, is the thing that's experienced by the people that migrate here is grief. It's grief for the community that's lost. It's grief for the people that are left behind. It's grief for the connection that they had to the country. You know, think about any ethnic mother or any ethnic father who is trying to teach the importance of their culture to their child. It's grief. They're trying to hold on to something that was left behind.
Yeah, yeah,
they're trying to make sure we don't forget. You know, and obviously when we're kids, we don't understand that. You don't know why you're going to Saturday school.
Yeah. Like, you're wasting my weekend.
Why am I going to this community event? Oh my God, there's people at work. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get older,
preservation, like a fear of like, losing.
When you get older, you go, important. Fuck, I'm so glad that my parents sent me to Turkish school. I don't know how to speak Turkish. Yeah. I'm so glad that they showed me those things about the history of our culture, even if it was just the smallest of seeds, whatever that is. Because then you look at other people and they don't have that.
Yeah. And they almost wish.
They almost wish they had it. Because it's like, fuck. You know, like, and we, you know, obviously I'm not holding it against anyone that doesn't speak the language of their country of origin, you know, fair enough. But it's a way to reconcile and connect to a part of you. I remember the first time I went to Izmir by myself. Yeah. I remember it was just after uni finished, before I got that job, my first go at uni. I was about like 23. And me and my mates were going to do a Euro trip, but I said I'm going to go up a month before and spend time with my grandparents and my family over there. My mum's side's all over there. I said before my grandparents passed away. I was going to spend a month there, and I went, and I swear to God, I've never felt more myself when I was there living with my auntie for a month. I never felt more myself. Maybe it was the age that I was at. Maybe it was just finished uni. I felt free, but maybe it was the first time I was away from my parents and sort of like completely by myself and able to experience my individualism. Yeah,
a bit of freer freedom and individualism.
But I remember we were leaving because my mates came. We were leaving to go to the rest of the other part of the trip. And I couldn't talk. I just cried. I couldn't talk to my auntie. I looked at her. I gave her a hug. I couldn't talk.
Because experiencing?
I was leaving. It was almost like I was leaving a version of myself behind. It was a strange thing. Yeah. I bawled my eyes out. I remember my mate looking like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And bless him, like, they were completely understanding and supportive. But I literally couldn't verbalize.
Is it almost like I have to go back?
Not just that. I think I had a fear. I think it was an intense fear of losing the person that I was when I was there. And obviously now
you like that person.
I love that person. You know? And it was like, what am I going back to now? Yeah. It changed who I was, but obviously I'm a bit older now. I understand that that's still part of me and that's still who I am and all that stuff. But like, it was the first time I felt that intense sense of like, this is who I am. And there are so many, like a lot of us, we go through lives without knowing that, knowing who we are.
And you almost don't know unless you have those experiences. Like you don't know, it teaches you something about yourself. And you might not even think that you're super connected to like your culture or whatever it is, but not only traveling as itself as like a learning experience, but then also the where you're going and you're spending time with these people that are literally a wealth of stories and connection to that other aspect, because we said both, right? But if we're not experiencing it authentically here, then we're only getting one side.
We're getting a curated version of it.
Yeah. And then going, you know, and I think that's, travel is super important.
Oh, huge.
Because so important. It opens up that other aspect, especially if you have, you know, like you said, the duality, I like that word of multiple identities or cultures and backgrounds. And I look forward to seeing like what comes of it and this project. I think, you know, like so many artists, like you said, they do amazing work. And again, if that's their intent, it's beautiful.
We appreciate that.
Seeing like the depth and how much thought goes into it, it's really, really not only inspiring, but it's great. That's why I moved here, bro. That's why I moved here. Like, oh, to see the depth of, like, this isn't like the camera, the lens is just, it's literally just the medium of something so much bigger. The microphone is a medium for something so much bigger. And I love that. I love the depth. Like, us as humans, we are so incredibly nuanced and complex, and artistic expressions are just mediums for how we tell stories or put ourselves out into the world. And I really look forward to it. I'm going to put all of your links and websites and all the stuff you want to share in the episode description. So if anyone is interested in anything, even if you're like slight, even if you're not interested, you should go and look at stuff. And I'll put all the good stuff, like the Instagram and all that stuff. Thank you so much for your time. It was amazing. And I really look forward to the outcome.
Thanks for having me, bro. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ad Love Podcast. It was great having you again. I hope this new era of the Ad Love Podcast is going to be amazing and awesome. And as wholesome as that episode was, please take the time to go and check out Erhan's social media. He's got a big project coming up that's so wholesome. I was a part of and it was amazing. Also, please go and check out Fadila's social media. She's an awesome, creative human being and she's on board with the Ad Love project moving forward. As always, look for every opportunity to add love to the world, and I hope to see you on the next episode of the Ad Love Podcast.